Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy Hump Day. Mm-hmm. Welcome to episode 30 of the Indie podcast. Your host tonight, and as always, is Stephen Jeeves. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. About half of what you just said, I didn't get to hear because you were cutting in and out. So maybe we could ask our listeners if there's a microphone problem, let us know on Twitter so that we can see what we can try to do something about it. But hey, glad to be here and good morning back at you. Want to remind our listeners that if you go over to Twitter and use hashtag Fresh Ink Group in a tweet, we're monitoring live on the air right now. You can post a question for today's guest or leave a comment or make threats or whatever you're into doing over on Twitter. That's hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Just put hashtag Fresh Ink Group anywhere in the body of the tweet and we will see it.
Yeah, and if you would like to join in the air through the miracle of the telephone, give us a call at 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. If I'm cutting out in the listening audience, if you're having trouble understanding what I'm saying, please let me know through a tweet, and we'll try to figure this out.
Or you could call in and tell us, too, and then talk to our guest while you're at it.
Yeah.
So we want to remind our listeners that after the show is done today, we will be putting it in our archives and encouraging people for decades to come back and listen to today's show. Those archives normally are at freshinkgroup.com under the podcast tab. We're pausing right now for a week or two here because we're doing some upgrades to the website. So that this week's podcast probably won't get on there for at least a few more days. But when we get those upgrades done, you're going to like the website. So we're going to be encouraging you to go over there and look around. We're also parking these podcasts at stephengees.com, beamweeks.com, and very importantly, in the Fresh Eat Group channel on YouTube, where not only can you listen to a great podcast with some great guests like tonight's guest, but you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit that little thumbs up, too, so that we all feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, Stephen, you're going to have to take over the show because the listeners are saying I'm cutting out. So I just run the studio, and you're going to interview our guest tonight.
Oh, great. And I was getting ready to take a nap. Okay, we're also going to have our shows on Spotify. We've been on there for a couple of weeks now. All 31 of our episodes should be over there. So if you're a Spotify user, get over there and check out our previous podcasts. We also want to announce that in the next week or so, we're planning on releasing a couple more books. And we will talk more about those once they are out and be pumping the commercials. One of them is the third book in the Mac McDowell Mission series, Operation Arctic Sting, by Robert G. Willis Croft. And also, Gwendolyn M. Plano has given us the privilege of republishing her classic memoir, Letting Go Into Perfect Love. And I'm hoping to have the covers just finished by tonight so that we can get that thing out in the next week or so also. We also want to mention that our Lauren here at Fresh Ink Group is going to be the editor of our next anthology. And we are running a contest, and Lauren says she's not getting very many entries so far, so she wants us to get on here and hype it up, spread the word. If you have a short story that you think would be a good fit for an anthology of short stories where it doesn't matter what the genre is, then send it our way. You can go over to freshinkgroup.com, and there's actually a contests tab with an entry form. Get over there,
come
use
on.
That, fill it out. Send us
come
the story.
Come on, writers.
Yeah. That brings us to today's guest, Karen Ingalls. We have been talking about having Karen on for a little while now, so we are thrilled that she is finally going to join us tonight. I'm going to read her bio for you now. It's a little bit long, but there's a lot to say about her. Karen Ingalls is the author of four books, of which two are award-winning. She has published nonfiction, a biographical novel, historical novel, and short stories. She is a retired registered nurse with a master's degree in human development. Her first nonfiction book, Outshine, an Ovarian Cancer Memoir, won first place at the 2012 Indie Excellence Book Awards in the category of Women's Health. It was a top finalist for the Independent Publisher Book Award of 2012 in the two categories of health and self-help. The book offers hope and inspiration to women and their families. Her most recent book is a series of 12 short stories, When I Rise, Tales, Truths, and Symbolic Trees. And I love the cover on that one, too. She's got a book called DeVita. Model and Mistress is about the love affair between her great-grandparents, Augustus St. Gaudens and DeVita. There are little-known facts about DeVita, except for her role as a model for many of the sculptor's famous works. It won the Pinnacle Book Achievement Award and the Apple Award for 2016. She has the book Novi's Son, The Selfish Genius. It's about Murray Clark, who sought love and acceptance from his father, who was the bastard child of the famous sculptor, Augustus St. Gaudens. After reading Iron John by Robert Bly, I read that back in college. I think most of us did. After reading Iron John by Robert Bly, Ms. Ingalls recognized what was missing in her father's life. She is a blogger, public speaker, author of many articles, and advocate for gynecologic cancer awareness and fundraiser for research. In her spare time, like she has any, she loves to read and play golf. All proceeds from the book sales go to ovarian cancer research. And with that said, welcome to the show, Karen.
My goodness. She sounds like a pretty accomplished woman.
Yeah.
I can't believe that. Wow.
We are impressed by her.
Thank you so much for having me here on the show. I really am excited and appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're glad to have you. So, we heard a little bit about you, but not nearly enough yet, because we're all interested and excited to learn. You're from originally Southern California, is that right?
Yes, I was born and raised in San Diego in the 1940s. And I was actually born in my grandparents' hospital.
Wow.
Now, not many people can make that claim, but my great aunt was a nurse. And again, this is back in the 20s and 30s. And she started out with just a couple of patients in a home, a boarding house, and then expanded and expanded until she had enough patients and a doctor to back her up that she built her own hospital, Quintard at the time it was called. And that's where I was born.
So, wow. And how long were you in San Diego? Was it your whole childhood, or did you move to Long Beach and Hollywood?
I moved to Long Beach when I was 7, but I spent about as much time in San Diego visiting my grandparents as I did living in Long Beach. And then when I was 16, I moved out of my mother's house and went to live with my dad, who was living in Hollywood. And I went to Hollywood High School, walked down Hollywood Boulevard every day, back and forth to school. At that time, going by Grauman's Chinese Theater and all that, it was very clean, very safe, and it was pretty exciting.
Hmm.
And then graduated and then went to the University of Colorado in Boulder.
Wow. So when you were at high school, Hollywood High School, did you see any people that went on to be famous?
Yes. Stephanie Powers.
Who?
She was 2 years behind me, but she and I were the exact same height and built. So we stood next to each other in drill teams. Now, that's not her birth name. I don't remember. I think it's Eastern European is her background. But she was a loved to tease and pull tricks and do harmless little things like that. She was not the sophisticated woman that you see today or used to see on TV before. And Annette Funicello was in my class for a year, and then she went to the studios to finish her education. And I'm sorry to say she was very snotty. She was a mouseketeer at the time, and I think she thought she was pretty important.
Wow.
And so I didn't get to know her.
Naughty Annette.
Yeah. I also, let's see, there were a number of students in the school whose parents were producers or directors. And I know for the Beverly Hillbillies, I don't remember her name. Her father was the producer for the Beverly Hillbillies. But an interesting fact, three doors, maybe four doors from our house, Bela Lugosi lived for the last year of his life.
Oh, Halloween had to be fun.
Well, he would walk down the street, and I recognized him, and my dad did, and we went out and introduced ourselves, and he was so impressed that this little 16-year-old girl would even know who he was.
Wow.
And of course, I was a huge fan of all the Bela Lugosi films and Boris Karloff.
Oh,
I love them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He was a very kind man. He died in his apartment. He was not well. He had a lot of drug and alcohol problems due to severe back injuries in his career. And so, you know, movie stars in those days didn't make them millions and millions of dollars that they do today, and they don't get the residuals back then either. So he died a poor man in a small little one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you'll write an essay or a little mini-memoir or something like that about that someday. That would be of interest to people.
Yeah, it would.
Well, Book of Short Stories, I have one. One of the short stories is about my neighbor, Count Dracula.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh.
So apparently I had a good idea there.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you went to the University of Colorado at Boulder. Every time I've been there, I've always thought of that as the campus with views. Such a beautiful area.
It is. And it was a very small, sleepy little town with one signal. I loved it out there. That's when I really fell in love with the Four Seasons, which you don't really have in San Diego and Southern California. So.
Yeah. So what did you do at Colorado? What did you major in? What were your interests?
Well,
how many times did you get arrested? You know.
I'm not going to say that. That'll be my secret.
Okay.
I was like a lot of college kids. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I had a dream of being a doctor in going to Africa and spread the word of Christianity and deliver babies and, you know, make everybody healthy. But, you know, again, in the 50s, women were supposed to get married and wear an apron and high heels and have babies. So I didn't get a lot of encouragement from my family, and I was the only person who graduated from college, except for my uncle who went to West Point, but I was the only woman who ever went to college, and that's still true today. My three sons went to college, but as a woman, I'm the only one. So I was kind of against, you know, I had some walls to climb, and I pursued just a general education. I love history, so I thought, well, I can't be a doctor. Society is frowning on it. My family says you're not going to Africa of all places. So I thought, well, surely I can be a professor at a university and teach history. So that's what I graduated with. And after graduation, I got married and had three sons, and then I went back to school and decided to get my nursing degree.
Wow. Now, you wound up back in San Diego at some point? Is that right?
Yes. Yes. When my husband and I got married, he was in the Navy. He was a physician, and he took his internship through the Navy, and we were stationed in San Diego the whole time, which is pretty unusual that we would be in the same spot all those years.
It is, yeah, very much. And then apparently you liked the climate of San Diego so much you moved to Minnesota?
Well, as I said to people who think I'm a little crazy, you have to think back to the culture in 1960s. You know, we were burning bras, we were free spirits, we were doing drugs, and everything was free love, free love, free love. And we lived 6 miles from the border, and my mother-in-law worked in the schools, and she was constantly dealing with kids, even in the grade schools, bringing drugs into the school. And I just thought, wow, this is not the kind of environment I want for my sons. And because my husband was a physician, we agreed that we would try to find something in the Midwest. And we ended up in, at the time, it was only 3,000 people. It's now about 130,000 people, about 20 miles from Minneapolis. So it had a good hospital and a small general practice that he fit right in with. And we raised our sons there, which to this day, every now and then, one of them will say, Mom, thank you for getting us out of California.
Yeah.
One of the smartest decisions I've ever made to do that.
Yeah, the only time that I've been up around that Minneapolis area, I was struck by how friendly everybody seemed. It struck me like it is, you know, in the South, where everybody already knows you, whether they know you or not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of nice, friendly people.
Well, you know, that Midwest nice.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
Very, yeah, people really welcomed us, and I just love Minnesota, even the winters, but now at my age and after living in Florida these years, it would be hard to go back up and be in the ice and cold and all. So
yeah. So where are you in Florida now?
We're in Central Florida. Excuse me. About as the crow flies, about 30 miles north of Orlando. And it's called Lake County area, and we're surrounded by lakes. And there's chains of canals that connect all the lakes. So we could get in our boat here, and we're 45 miles from the Gulf and 45 miles from the Atlantic. We could get in our boat and just go from lake to through canals and end up in either the Atlantic or the Gulf if we wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a bass fisherman. I live on Guntersville Lake in Alabama, which is considered the third best bass fishing in the country. Down where you are, especially all those canals and the small lakes, and then especially Okeechobee is considered the best bass fishing, number one bass fishing in the country. So if you haven't taken up bass fishing yet, I hear you have a lot of spare time.
Yeah, from about midnight to 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
But we do. We both fish either off the dock. We catch bass and, oh, goodness.
Crappie?
Oh, crappies, yes.
Probably brim also, maybe?
I don't know.
Brim is that category, bluegills, sunfish, sun perch, all of those.
Yeah. I just get them on my hook, and I'm excited, and I say, what is it? I mean,
there you
can tell, but otherwise, I don't know what I'm catching.
That's
so, but we go out in our boat, and we eat the fish. We have caught some good-sized smallmouth bass that we've put back because we figure they're going to probably have eggs, and we don't want to deplete the population.
Yeah.
We only keep them if they're good size for eating. So, yeah, we enjoy that. And my office, I can open up the blinds in the morning, and I look right out at the lake. It's about 20 feet from the side of our house here. So I can look at the lake and watch the sun come up every morning, and I love it.
Wow, that's my view is facing east, too. And I used to think it was all about sunsets, but sunrises can be spectacular. They really can, especially across the water.
Isn't that about the time you're going to bed, Stephen?
Sometimes, yeah. Also facing east like that, you get to see the moon rises across the water, and those are really nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
that's
my favorite. I'll go out here and sit and just watch that moon sometimes. Okay, well, before we get to our first commercial, we want to remind our listeners that you can call in 516-453-9902, or you can go on Twitter and use the hashtag #FreshInGroup, and we will see your tweet. Over on Twitter, we got a couple of comments. First of all, we want to thank Verwayne, Robert Willis Croft, and Marlena Smith for letting us know about Beam's microphone cutting out.
And Mara Beth, friend.
And, well, Mara Beth just has hashtag #FreshInGroup in
the
tweet here.
You click on the bottom of it. It says
show this thread. Ah, got it.
It says Stephen is okay. Beam is breaking up.
But Beam is breaking up. Got it. I've never seen that little thing in the bottom of
the tweet.
So
I'm still
hearing
ground, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm still hearing your breakup. So we'll get through this. We'll just let Karen do all the talking. We also have a comment from Robert Willis Croft. He says, I believe it was Mark Twain who defined a fishing pole as a long stick with a fool at both ends. Yeah. My father's the hardcore bass fisherman. He just turned 84 years old yesterday, and he spent the day on the lake out there fishing today. So I'm going to give him that quote. Verwayne Greenhoe says, I tried burning my bra once in 1969, but I couldn't find a blowtorch big enough. Laugh out loud. I remember those days. My wife doesn't, and she just smacked me. Laugh out loud. Marlena Smith says, you've had such an incredible life, Karen. I can't wait to see what's next for you. Yeah, we can't wait. And Mara Beth Brennan just came back, and she says, hi, Karen and everyone. We're glad to have you out in the audience today, Mara Beth. And we're planning on having you on the show sometime this summer. We've already got you on the list. So that said, you want to go ahead and roll the commercial for Lauren so that we can see if we can get some contest entries going?
Sure.
Writers, got a short story looking for a prestigious anthology that will showcase your work alongside other top authors? Or maybe you've experienced a moment worth sharing, perhaps with some poignant meaning we could all appreciate? Fresh Ink Group is accepting submissions for our second and third volumes of the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase to be released worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. There are no fees to enter. Winners are not only published, but are eligible to become members of Fresh Ink Group with your own dashboard in the FreshInkGroup.com website. Head on over to FreshInkGroup.com contest tab to learn more. Then grease up the old Underwood and get those shorts down on parchment so you can get your entries in sooner than later. And you readers, discover 49 wondrous tales already released in the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number 1, available in all formats worldwide.
All Now, we're serious about that. Lauren is looking for those entries. So if you've got a short story out there that you've been sitting on, you better send it in to her, because if she finds out you're not, she'll come to your house and knock on the door. I'm serious about that. So get those stories in. Now, I understand we have a caller, Beam.
Yes. Hello, caller. You are on the air. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
I presume you are talking to me.
Yes, you.
I am.
Dr.
I am
Helen.
Indeed.
Hi, Dr. Helen.
Hi. I have a few comments very interesting about Miss Engels. Very interesting. What I wanted to say was quickly, Outshine, I took a look at it over at Amazon. It's excellent, comprehensive. And your writing gives hope and optimism to ovarian cancer patients. Now, what I would like to know is, how does your nursing expertise inform your fiction writing?
I want to make sure I heard the question. How does my nursing...
How does your nursing background and your nurse... Presumably, you've taken care of patients, correct?
I was. I'm retired now.
Yeah,
I know, but listen, I'm also an RN and writer. I just want to know how nursing has, because I see from that book, I haven't had a chance to look at your fiction, which I hope to read, your short stories. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, how does your experience as a nurse inform any of your fiction?
Oh, I see. Okay, I apologize. I don't know if you were breaking up or my hearing or whatever, so I wanted to make sure I heard your question correctly.
Well, I'm always breaking up.
Oh, well.
Psychiatrically, that is.
Yeah.
No,
you know,
I just want to know how, I'm wondering if it's similar to mine or different, how your creativity is somehow, you know, how nursing has effect. Because as you know, Chekhov was a physician. So people, how being a healthcare professional somehow has affected your creativity?
Well, I think more the fact that my perspective and my area of nursing has always been more on the emotional, mental caring, and spiritual journey of the patient. Being an OR nurse or an ER nurse, even a floor nurse, was not my strength, not my passion. But being a hospice nurse and working in the epilepsy unit at the hospital and in the clinic, where I really had no more than four patients, and there was a lot of counseling and teaching and family dynamics going on with each patient who had epilepsy, whether it was due to a tumor or whatever. So my books and my life and my stories are all wrapped together from a more psychological, emotional component. When I did get my master's in human development / psychology, I did a double major, thinking at the time that I wanted to be a clinical psychologist. And I took statistics, which I hated. Doesn't fit with my brain.
Writers and statistics do not go together, right?
No. But then when it came time to start the process of taking the test, I knew that was not where I belonged. And this is in the late 80s, and at that time, it was unethical, not permissible, not encouraged for the therapist to touch the patient. You could shake their hand and maybe put your hand on their shoulder, but the idea of a therapist hugging the patient, or the client, I should say, was...
No. Yes. Go back to the word patient.
Well, okay, but...
No. A client is a client I had when I was in advertising. A patient is someone you take care of, you know. Come on.
I do know that. But the,
we're both RNs, we know. Right.
In the area of psychology, they use the term client.
I know, but that doesn't that remove you somewhat from the patient?
So that's why I chose not to sit for the exams, because I believe so strongly and passionately about the importance of healthy touch.
Yes.
And
good.
The skin is the largest organ of our body.
Yes.
And it affects
every
other organ of our body. It affects every other sense of our body. So anyway, what I did instead is I started my own counseling business. I didn't get recognized by any insurance company, but I bartered with my clients or patients who came to see me for counseling, and some of them came to me for counseling and therapeutic massage and healing touch. And a number of them came to me to heal from the sexual physical abuse they had suffered at some point in their life. And so doing the talk therapy either at the same time as the massage or before or after, a number of people were truly helped with that. And
that's excellent. Have you written a book about that?
No, but I probably should.
That's excellent. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you for the encouragement. Because it's been in mind to do that. I just haven't. But you've encouraged me. Thank you.
I'm just letting you know that I'm in the same background and psychotherapist. I never touch. I would hug a patient at the end of a session. But I totally agree with your approach, and you can call yourself a psychotherapist, and you can call them a patient. But I think you should write about it, because it sounds like you're extremely empathic, and that would be a wonderful book, because you're a good writer from what I've read so far over at Amazon.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying
that. We would love to publish that book as well. So thank you for calling in again, Helen. We're glad to see you out there in the audience, and we hope to hear from you on future podcasts as well.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan.
Yep.
I'm listening, though. I'd like to.
Yep. We've got another comment over on Twitter from Marlena Smith. She says, "I've always wanted to go on mission trips too, but have never had the opportunity. I think that's an admirable goal. Even though you may not have made it to Africa, you still show that side of you in your writing and the way you are with people. Your heart shows." And then she put a heart after it.
Oh, Marlena, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome to use that hashtag all you want, Marlena.
you got a comment from Mara Beth as well, and from Verwayne.
Did you do... Okay, R-E-I-K-I. I don't even know what that is. Did you do Reiki at that time, Karen? Maybe tell us what that is, Karen.
Yeah, it's a form of healing, it's spiritual, physical, mental, emotional healing. I did not do that. But I'm very familiar with it, and I've had Reiki done on me or with me or through me. What I did, which is similar, is called Mariel, Mari-El, Mariel healing. And also the healing touch that, is it Dorothy Krager, I think, is the nurse that developed that to help people get in touch with their inner energy. I don't know if I'm making any sense with what I'm saying, but...
Yeah, I think so. Okay, thanks for the comment, Maura, or the question, I should say. So, Karen, you've mentioned your husband a couple of times, but you haven't told us anything about him. What's his name? Have you got any stories?
Well, his name is Jim, and he was going to sit in on this with me, but he has been suffering with migraine headache for 4 days now.
Oh, no.
And he just said, I just can't do it. And I said, no, that's fine. You just go in and go to bed. He's probably sound asleep. This is our second marriage. He was married 28 years, and I was married 25. We met at the library, and we knew instantly that the angels had been tripping over themselves to get us to meet. Hmm. And all I did was look into those eyes and just saw this beautiful aura around him, and I knew this is the person I had been looking for. I wasn't consciously out there looking. In fact, I didn't, after my divorce, I just wanted to, you know, just kind of find myself and figure life out. But when he walked into the library and sat down near me, that was it. I just knew.
Wow, so, terrific.
Yeah.
So what's the story with him and the cat?
Oh, well, when we met, I had this Siamese cat. I love Siamese cats. His name was Smokey, and he was only about 5 years old. And Jim is very allergic to cats. And when we decided to start living together, I said, well, I know you're allergic to the cat, so I will find a home for him. And Jim said, no, I know how much you love him, and he loves you. No. So the only thing is that Smokey had to give up his spot in bed with me, and Jim took it over. No, Jim, you know, took allergy pills, and he was very good about allowing Smokey to continue to be part of my life. So that's a real sign of tremendous love. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
So we're going to take another quick break for a commercial. Remind our listeners again, call 516-453-9902. You can talk to us or Karen, and get over to Twitter. Use hashtag Freshening Group, and we'll see what you post there. Got a commercial for us, Beam?
I sure do.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972, when Mac and his off-the-books Deepwater Espionage Group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay SOSUS arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Williscroft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo, and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. take a deep breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Now, earlier in the show, I mentioned that we're getting ready to publish the third book in that series, Operation Arctic Sting. So look for that in the next week or two, as soon as we get everything together, and discover a wonderful, wonderful series set in the Cold War. Sometimes it reminds me, when I look at that commercial, it reminds me of that Geico commercial now where the guy's trying to help people not become their parents. And he asks the guy, okay, who reads books about submarines? Your father? But actually, they're very exciting thrillers. I thoroughly enjoy them. So I highly recommend people discover Robert G. Willis-Croft and his Mac McDowell Mission series. So Karen, we're talking to Karen Ingalls today, author and denizen of Central Florida. What did you do when you're not writing, Karen? What do you do to keep yourself busy otherwise?
Well, I do love golf. In fact, I'm getting up early tomorrow morning to play golf. And I do an enormous amount of volunteer work to raise awareness about ovarian, but any gynecologic cancer. It's an area of the body women do not want to talk about, even with their doctors a lot of times. They ignore symptoms, and it's an area of medicine that is not recognized as well. So I do a lot of fundraising. I was out doing a lot of public speaking, but now I do a lot of Zoom talks and meetings. I work closely with GSK, GlaxoSmithKline Pharmaceutical Company, and the Clarity Foundation out in San Diego, doing whatever I can to help spread the word. In the evening, I make what are called prayer shawls. It keeps my hands busy while I'm watching television. And prayer shawls have a special prayer and that you kind of recite either out loud or to yourself. And I make them for the women in chemotherapy. Most of us get cold while we're receiving the chemo. And even afterwards, that's a common thing, that we feel cold all the time. So I donate those shawls and a copy of the prayer to the women. So I do a lot of that. I do a lot of cooking and baking and some gardening. I did a lot more gardening in Minnesota for the few months that were available compared to here in Florida. I'm still trying to get used to the soil and what the soil likes and what kind of where they plants want to be and how happy they are. So I haven't done as much. I used to be out in the garden all the time, but a little bit less now. I love, love, love to play games and cards. If I could play them 24/7, I probably would. So I get together with women once or twice a week and play different forms of games or cards. That's something I really enjoy. So, and then we're always trying to plan a trip, but of course COVID's put a squelch on a lot of that. But we're starting to make plans for this fall to go someplace.
Oh, that'll be good. You'll be ready to go by then.
Oh, yes.
So we understand that the first book that you published was The Living Tree of Nursing Theories. Is that right?
Actually, it was an article. It was not a book. It was an article for a nursing journal. I co-authored it with a friend of mine. And nursing theory is not a favorite subject of mine. It's, but she really wanted to write it. She wanted me to help her. So we just put our two brains together. And of course, Florence Nightingale is the trunk of the tree. And then the different branches are the different theorists. And that particular article has been used by, I don't know how many, but a number of schools of nursing around the nation. And there's a school of nursing called Augsburg in the Minneapolis area. And they have either, when I lived up in that area, had me come, or they have my friend Charlotte come and talk about that article. It's incredibly well received.
Oh, good. That's not very many people can say that about their first article.
No.
So then that led to what is your first actual book, your first novel, Novi's Son?
My first novel is Novi's Son. My first book is Outshine.
Okay.
And I approached the publishing company in Minneapolis. I knew nothing about publishing, of course. You don't learn that in nursing school or any place else. And I had written Outshine thinking part of my desire to get women to know about this disease. And but I had also finished my novel, Novi's Son, several years before. And I had an English professor that lived next door to us, and I showed her my book, my manuscript for Novi's Son, and she just said, "You've got to get this published." So I went to this independent publisher in Minneapolis called Beaver's Pond and showed them the manuscript for Outshine and for Novi's Son. They loved them both, but they encouraged me to publish Outshine first, being a brand new author, new to the whole experience, because then you have a targeted audience. So I did, and then a few years later, I published Novi's Son.
So what is Novi's Son about?
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit. my third book is called Davida, which is about my great-grandparents, Augustus St. Gaudens and his mistress, Davida, who was his model. They had one son, my grandfather, and St. Gaudens called him Novi as a nickname.
Huh.
And so my father is Novi's son. My father was one of the most unusual, interesting, not easily friendly, not easy to like individual. I loved him, but I don't know that I liked him a whole lot.
Hmm.
But his life was so interesting and so different, and being the first grandchild of Augustus St. Gaudens, I thought that's why I chose the title Novi's Son. But it's not a biography because I don't know every detail. I couldn't substantiate, you know, things. But that's what it's about. And again, because of Iron John, excuse me, as you said in the introduction, I came to understand my dad and why he was the person he was and married four times and had all kinds of mistresses and all kinds of strange things and a very, very different man.
Well, it's the very, very different people that make interesting subjects for books.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know how he would feel. He had passed by the time I had published it. I don't know how he would feel about reading it, but he said to me shortly before he passed, he said, "Well, why did I get married four times?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. You must have been in love four times." "Oh, no, I've never loved any of them." So that kind of
So how about Outshine then? Tell us what that's about.
Well, that's about my journey with ovarian cancer. It tells about the highs and the lows. it talks about the symptoms of ovarian cancer, treatments, chemotherapy. But I also incorporate how I mean, obviously when I heard the words you have cancer, I went through the grief stages, obviously.
Yeah.
But I never bargained with God. If I did, it was for a split second. And I don't know if I would really say depressed, but I was sad. And then I pulled myself out of it. And the way I moved into acceptance was really looking at, because the doctor had said I had a 50% chance to live 5 years. How do I want to live if I have exactly 5 years or less? How do I want to live that time? And I made a promise to myself and to God that I would live each moment with as much love as I could, and that I would do as much as I could to spread the word about ovarian cancer. And certainly I have not succeeded. I'm a human being, but I try. So that's what Outshine is about. And my philosophy is that we need to outshine whatever challenge we have. You know, whether it's a divorce, loss of a job, loss of a loved one, a serious diagnosis like mine, we need to rise above it and learn from it and become better people.
That's a beautiful thought. How long ago was that diagnosis? How many years ago about?
It was in June of 2008. So I tell people I'll be celebrating my 13th birthday in June.
All right. Well, yeah. That's very encouraging, isn't it?
It is, when I was told, like, only 50% chance for 5 years. And I've had to say goodbye to so many women that I've come to know through this disease. But it's come a long way, not just due to me, but to other women like myself who are really pounding the doors and shouting out to get recognition for this disease. Because of the GYN cancers, it's the most difficult to diagnose. And most women are diagnosed at a late stage, so survival is pretty low.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's difficult for so many women to face that or deal with that or get around to having to accept something until it's kind of late in the game. That makes a book like yours is a terrific gift. You know, if somebody knows somebody who they've got concerns about or whatever, that, you know, share that book with them and let them see what the steps are, what it takes, what other people have gone through, what Karen Ingalls has learned from that experience, so that they can start to chart a path for themselves forward in dealing with something that's new and very scary.
Right. And the difficulty with ovarian cancer is that the symptoms are very, very subtle. And my only symptom was that I started, you know, getting more of a tummy. And I'm a small frame, thin person. And I figure, well, I'm 67, it's postmenopausal. Maybe I need to exercise more. So I didn't go running to the doctor. Where if you have uterine or cervical or other types of cancers in the GYN area, there's usually a discharge or bleeding, unexpected bleeding or sharp pains and things like that, that would have a woman go and have a check. You know, but the symptoms also mimic other illnesses. So even if you go to the doctor, he may say, or she may say, well, you're just postmenopausal. Oh, it could be a gastro thing. I'm going to send you to the gastric doctor. Oh, it's orthopedic because you've got this pain in your back. So you might be like a Gilda Radner and be sent from doctor to doctor before the doctors say, let's do an ultrasound. Let's do a CA-125 and let's really see what's going on and look at family history. However, most of us have no family history.
I didn't know that. Over on Twitter, Marlena Smith says, we love games. What's your favorite card game?
My favorite card game is called Books and Runs. I don't know if she knows it. It's Books and Runs. It's my favorite game as far as cards go. I do love cribbage, and I love gin rummy. I love canasta, and any rummy game is fun. So, but my very favorite game, I'm dying for you to ask me that, my very favorite game right now is called Marbles and Cards. And it's kind of like, you remember the game Sorry? No? Are you there?
I am not hearing anybody right now. Did I lose everybody?
I don't know. I'm here. Can you hear?
I'm hearing some distortion and noise coming from Karen, and I heard one word from Beam. We seem to be having some technical problems this week. Okay. Are you there, Karen?
I'm here. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you now. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, my next question was about your short story collection, When I Rise. Each story is about a tree, is that right?
Not about a tree, but the story...
kind of name for a tree?
Connects to the symbolism of a tree. And so that's how the connection goes.
So what kind of stories are they?
They're about, a lot of them are about social or health issues. Like one of my favorites is about Alzheimer's. I am fascinated and would love to know what the person with Alzheimer's, what do they see the world as? You know, what they project out may not be what they're feeling or thinking inside. We don't know. I don't think we'll ever know. I don't know. Not in my lifetime. So I wrote a short story about, based on my grandmother. She didn't have Alzheimer's, but, you know, at 93, she did get some dementia, and then she would kind of forget who we were and all. And she was a great, great pianist. So my story is trying to step into her body and maybe not recognizing the keyboard and being frightened of what are these black and white things, and don't put my hands on them. And then after whatever period of time, she just plays and plays and plays. And when she's sleeping and when she goes into what you call the altered state, when she's not communicating with us on Earth, she is in a room with her favorite Rachmaninoff and Mozart, her favorite composers, and the three of them are playing the pianos. So I like to think that that's the way Grandma saw the world, was that she was with her favorite composers in this beautiful room on beautiful Steinway pianos. So that's one story. Another one is about a magical cigar box that brings joy or healing to the different people that the cigar box is passed on to. And it's a magical box. Another one is about a son who is a drug addict and how eventually he comes through and recognizes how destructive he was to himself and came to peace with his father and his mother, who had passed away, but she was still guiding and working with her son and father and husband to heal their relationship and to heal. So those are kind of some of the ideas. There's 12 different ones. So.
Well, they sound wonderful. What about the title, When I Rise? Where did that come from?
Well, my grandson, in fact, I can see the poem right here in front of me. He wrote this poem called When I Rise, and I was so touched by it. I framed it, enlarged it, and framed it. And it just kind of, every morning I'd look at it, and it would kind of speak to me. And I just, that's how I decided, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do now, is write short stories based on life. Of when I rise, what do I do with that day? What does that character do with that day, those 24 hours?
Wow. Over on Twitter, Maura Beth Brennan says, sounds like you are doing a wonderful job keeping your promise, Karen. Also, Marlena, she says, you truly are an inspiration, Karen, and your message is beautiful. I would imagine the writing was very therapeutic for you, but was it also difficult?
No, it wasn't difficult. It flowed very easily, and it was incredibly therapeutic. I certainly shed tears at times, but there's nothing wrong with tears. They're very healing. They're very important. So, no, it wasn't hard. It was good. I pick it up every now and then and read a passage or a chapter. And, you know, no, it was hard. And thank you, Mara, for recognizing that I've kept my promise. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, that brings us to your current project, which is still at least 2, probably 3 months out from being ready to be published, to be released. But mm-hmm. it's a very important project. It's literally what they call a passion project. And that's mm-hmm. your book called Raising Justin, A Journey with Autism. Can you tell us what you're expecting to do with that?
Well, this is a good friend of mine that I met just 3 years ago. She's an ovarian cancer survivor. That's how we met in a support group. And she raised, and is still raising, Justin, who's going to be 32, I believe, in just a few months, who mother had, was a drug addict. And while Justin was still in utero, he had a stroke that destroyed the entire left side of his brain. But
oh, no.
Yeah. And so he's got cerebral palsy. He's got the hemiparesis and a lot of issues. And his first 9 months of life was in the hospital. And then he went to a foster home for the terminally ill, and Carol is her name. She and her husband adopted him. She had already been a special education teacher for 15 years, and her 2 biological children, one had already left the nest and one was almost out the door. And she just really felt drawn to adopt Justin, who I consider a miracle child. I saw him today. He's a miracle. That's all I can say. And I give Carol's husband tremendous credit for it. So when she told, each time I'd see her, she'd tell me a little bit more about her life, and that she started, along with the help of 2 other women, but she was the main driver, the first charter school for autism in the state of Florida. And all other charter schools developed as a result of her. And I said, you're just a miracle, Carol. What you have done with your life and what you have done for Justin and so many children and their parents that have autism, your story needs to be told because you are an inspiration. So that's what I'm doing. Yeah, and I hope to have the manuscript to you in a couple of weeks at the latest. I'm working really hard at it, so we're getting close.
We are looking forward to it, and we're going to want to have you back on the show to talk a lot more about that once that book is out. It's going to be terrific from what I've seen so far. Karen, how can people find you? Social media, handles, websites, blogs? Where are you out there?
Well, all of the above. I have two Facebook pages. Or sites. One is called Outshine Ovarian Cancer, and the other one is just my name, Karen Ingalls. I'm on LinkedIn and Pinterest. I don't do too much with Pinterest for some reason. And I do have a website, Karen Ingalls Home at WordPress.com. And I used to blog faithfully every week, but that's not the case anymore. I might do two blogs in a week and then you may not see anything for a while. I just have, you know, there's not enough hours in the day sometimes. So that's it. I think those are the main ones. What's the picture one?
Pinterest?
Yeah, I'm on Pinterest.
Oh, Instagram.
Instagram?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Instagram. I'm on it, but I don't do very much with it.
Also, is Karen Ingalls?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. And that's Ingalls for you listeners out there who weren't quite sure of the spelling. Yeah,
right.
Karen's out there. Get out and have a look. And check out her four books that are out now and the fifth book that will be coming out soon. Karen, it's been a thrill having you on here. I know I speak for Beam also when I say we've put you on our short list right away, and we've been looking forward to having you, and we certainly want to have you again when we can talk about that last book. So thanks again.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate all the calls and the Twitters, and thank you, Beam, and thank you very much, Gary, for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, and remember, listeners, these shows will be archived, especially over on YouTube. Next week, our guest is going to be Forrest Stepnowski. He's a nurse practitioner in the emergency room out in, I believe it's Washington State, somewhere up there in the upper left corner of the United States. And he's also got an interesting personal life. He has a kind of a cross-dressing cabaret-style show that he participates in. He's got some poetry out, essays, things like that, and a lot of that has to do with a young man who's struggling to learn about his identity. So next week, Forrest Stepnowski, we're really looking forward to having him. So thanks again, Karen. Thanks all you listeners, for everybody for participating. Thanks for spreading the word. Thanks for getting over there and subscribing to that YouTube channel so we can get those numbers up. And we'll see everybody next week. Thanks and bye.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.